The following program is paid for by the program sponsor.
It's time for Energy Matters, Let's Talk, sponsored by the Conservative Energy Network. Here's your host, Leitner Communications General Manager Andy Kreiser, Conservative Energy Network Executive Director Michael Geiselhart, and Program Director Justin Mason.
Welcome, everyone, to the July episode of Energy Matters, Let's Talk, brought to you by our friends at the Conservative Energy Network. Joining me today on the phone are Conservative Energy Network Program Director Justin Mason and Executive Director Michael Geiselhart. Welcome, fellas.
Glad to be here.
Andy, how are you doing? Thanks for having us, sir.
Sure. I hope you both were able to overcome the extreme heat and strong thunderstorms over the holiday weekend. I know that ties into energy for a lot of people with grids being overwhelmed or grids being off and things. So we had some pretty nasty storms in State College and some temperatures almost up to 100 degrees. So we got hit on both ends. How about for you guys?
Michael?
Yeah, I'd say same here. I'm in Westmoreland County, but similar to yourself, high temperatures, major storms, definitely a lot of power outages out my way. So I'm hoping a lot of the folks in your area avoided that.
Yeah, unfortunately, Andy, we had 267,000 people without energy, according to the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency this weekend throughout the holiday. So the PJM took a large hit from its operating load of 22 gigawatts, falling nearly 80% down to an operational capacity of 5 gigawatts, getting very close to the state's minimum requirement of energy operation of 3.2 gigawatts, leaving 267,000 Pennsylvanians without power on the PJM. So there was a lot of power outages felt through the weekend, through the holiday, at a time when really everyone's home and everyone's hoping that their power works proficiently and efficiently. So we're seeing some moments on our grid system in the state of Pennsylvania due to the closure of energy generation stations that we're experiencing respectively for the first time to some degrees. So the storms had its impact, the heat dome had its impact, and us, the ratepayers, were left on the hook. So let's get into talking about what exactly took place. With the combination of the heat dome, the generation outages, the overload on the transmission, PJM was pushed into its emergency posture. Like I gave some context here about our fall of 80% from 22 megawatts down to 22 gigawatts down to 5 gigawatts. Michael, thoughts on where we are, how this all took place, and how ratepayers were left in the wake of the suffrage?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think you outlined it very well, because we did kind of have that triple threat, a classic grid perfect storm, as they'd say. You know, the heat dome, as you mentioned, you know, we had cooling demand at a near record peak across 13 states. And with a high temperatures and inherently reduced transmission line capacity, you know, the lines sag and overheat, and the lower the efficiency of the conventional power plants. The third point is, you know, you always see unplanned generator forced outages during extreme heat due to mechanical strain. You know, so when we're looking at this, when local generation drops or fails, power must be imported from other zones. This overloads specific transmission corridors, so those importing power eastward into the mid-Atlantic and northern Virginia, this would prevent the lines from overloading and tripping. So PJM had to call an emergency procedure, burning through reserves to rebalance the system during a point of just overheating. You know, we haven't even touched the point of natural disasters or power lines going down, and then, you know, this is really highlighting the concern that, you know, Justin and I are trying to advocate, not just in Pennsylvania, but also in Congress, that, you know, we have to start producing more energy, because right now there is no projects set to be produced in Pennsylvania. And if Pennsylvania is not producing enough energy and the Northeast continues to push for renewables without baseload energy, we're going to become, as we've often said on this show, kind of in debt energy wise, or we're going to have to look at Ohio, West Virginia, and other states to make up the difference. And, you know, they aren't Pennsylvania. This is our bread and butter. We have always been a powerhouse for the country. So I think this is a wake-up call, and you know, I really hope that the legislature can start making some movements in this front as well.
Do you think that the average customer for their energy now, can they use an example like this to point to with frustration to say that they want fixes and changes? Isn't an event, you know, like we had over the weekend with extreme heat and storms and stuff, is that something that you could take advantage of to get some groundswell and momentum in your direction? Because I'm wondering, where do most people go with their complaints first? Is it to their local electric provider? Or where, I don't know where they think that the duty falls for all this, but I would think that awareness would help now with these saying, hey, we need to do something because this could get worse in the future.
Yeah, usually from my perspective, and Justin, let me know your thoughts on this as well, is, you know, the first complaint is to the energy companies or the linemen, as they say. I've had conversations with kind of the linemen, and, you know, they've been yelled at and screamed at, and they're like, you know, the electricity grid doesn't work the way folks think about it. They're like, why is my house out, but my neighbor across the street who is a different electricity provider has energy? You know, it's a little bit of a complex scenario because the grid is very hard to understand, very complex, and takes time to kind of break down how it works. But I think from our perspective, this is a good thing for us to help show legislators how close we are to that minimum requirement, which I would argue is the danger zone, and we got very close to it. However, because it didn't necessarily stop folks from seeing the effects of how close we were to that 3.2 gigawatt minimum requirement, a lot of folks aren't going to see that strain yet. It's when we have heat and the power goes down or out, not just because of storms, that's where they're going to feel that push, and we're going to see kind of the public pushback. But we can flirt this line until 3.2 gigawatt, and the average citizen's not really going to gripe about it because their electricity is still being produced. They're still able to have the AC unit. They're still able to do their normal day things. It's once that kind of threshold is broken that we have a big problem in our hands.
Well, speaking of AC, and I like to keep things a little bit lighthearted, how do you think people in Pennsylvania would react if Shapiro would say what Mondami, the mayor of New York City, said when they were having that heat wave? And he said that he was requesting everybody to set their air conditioners to 78 degrees. I know in my household, I have a 14-year-old stepdaughter who needs it to be like Antarctica in her bedroom with our mini split system. Like, don't you think that that's pretty laughable and would go over pretty poorly if we asked people in Pennsylvania to set their air conditioning units to 78 degrees when it's 95 degrees outside?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think generically, you know, telling anyone to do anything they don't want to do is always going to have pushback. And especially the 78 degrees, you know, even if we set it to that 78 degrees, yeah, it might help in the short term, but it still doesn't address the problems we have. And you could argue that 78 degrees, there's people that have, you know, ailments or disabilities where they do need to be cooler. You know, there's a number of arguments here, but Justin, I'd love to get your take on this as well.
No, thank you. 64 out of 67 counties were affected by the storms this weekend. So that leaves a whole lot of ratepayers uncomfortable and impacted for that matter. But number two, if you're asking people who are in emergency medical situations where they need a CPAP, things to be at a certain temperature due to health stresses, we can't be asking these folks to go without energy generation for a moment. And they pay for that type of consistency and, you know, the reliability from their service. And unfortunately, we're now entering into a realm where that consistent comfort that we have always celebrated at the plug and at the switch is now starting to be threatened. So you're going to have people that can't be in these types of situations medically or even emotionally because they might be stressed out if they're having to be in an 80 degree home or close to it. They're going to be starting to feel the brunt very quickly, especially in the coming months and next year, especially.
I see a lot of online pushback and fighting amongst both pro and con supporters for wanting to blame like AI data centers, and they say that they're going to be the cause of all this, and that, you know, they're going to sap all the water and natural resources in the area to cool. And I've been seeing more and more public opinion being both for and against these data centers. Have you guys noticed that that dialogue in the community has started to ramp up over the last few months? Or am I just somehow my algorithm is feeding me more? Because I didn't really see much of it before, but it seems like lately I'm getting a lot of people that are in this debate and arguing over data centers and the liability and the pro side of them.
Yes, sir. I've been ringing this bell for a number of years, so thank you so much for asking this question. I've been telling people, even within my own organization, data centers are coming, data centers are coming. It's going to impact energy. It's going to impact resources. We need to be mindful of this. And I just got really a deer in headlights look for so long. But now it's irrefutable what these impacts are, what they stand to do. I don't want to speak about the negative externalities of these types of systems, because really it's up to industry to mitigate and manage the resource strains that they're creating, whether we're talking water, noise, electric. But that's where we get the introduction of opportunity too, because with calamity, there is opportunity and sustainability begins to arise. So then that's when enter the picture of batteries being integrated onto our grid system that allow flexible resources to be distributed energy resource management tools in the toolbox. Now we start seeing things like grid enhancing technologies, advanced transmission technologies, virtual power plants, all beginning to come online to help manage these stressors that are facing us, that data centers, electrification, and other factors that are impacting our grid system in terms of degeneration, if you will, that we are all being faced with. We need to start looking at dynamic line rating. As Michael described, that's where the line sags due to heat, whether we're talking electricity movement heat, and you know it, that's from coming from large load, or we're talking physical environmental stressors and heat inside of the weather system. These types of things are now leading to a adjustment and a revamping of our grid system at this time, which, again, inside of calamity, there is opportunity, and that's when sustainability begins to arise.
Very good points. We have about 2 minutes left, so I'll open the floor for you guys to get some closing thoughts and how we want to address the topic for today and what can people do to help.
Yeah, I think I would say, happy to. I'd say for me, Thursday was definitely a flashing red warning light. And, you know, I want people to pay attention to that because AI data centers require up to 3 times more power than traditional cloud data. And I think that's important to know. So if that outpaces the load growth, or the load growth outpaces the continued transmission construction and generation interconnection, the reserve margins will remain razor thin. So that means during these heat waves and other kind of natural disasters, as we'll say, is that there is zero margin for error. Because if baseload plants are, you know, run flat out and firing up is expensive, fast starting peaker plants are now on all at once, there is no room for mistake. And if there is one issue that takes one of these plants down, or a transmission line tripped at 6 p.m., on a Thursday, then PGM would have been looking at rolling blackouts. So while we were able to avoid this concern and the warning lights, it is something to take into a very serious conversation across the state as to what we could potentially looking like in the next year, not even next 2 years.
Absolutely. Justin,
my answer
quick
to
note.
All this, yep. Quick note is batteries, batteries, batteries. We need energy storage systems on the grid today. We can't wait till tomorrow. We quite literally need them to start being built today.
Yeah, I agree. It looks like the writing is on the wall and the evidence is starting to mount up now, where people are starting to take notice more. And I think better planning and everything is something that needs to be in consideration. So all good stuff we talked about today. That's going to wrap up our July edition of Energy Matters Let's Talk. I want to thank Justin and Michael for their time today, and remind everyone that we'll be back again on the second Thursday in August for the next episode of Energy Matters Let's Talk. For more information on the mission statement of the Conservative Energy Network, check them out at cen-pa.org. That's C-E-N-pa.org. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Energy Matters, Let's Talk, sponsored by the Conservative Energy Network. Tune in the second Thursday of each month at 9 a.m. on WRSC and noon on WRTA for Energy Matters, Let's Talk. The preceding program has been paid for by the program sponsor.